Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Slay, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. It's me, it's Ben.
And me, Bill.
Woohoo! Today, Bill and I come to you to talk about an article that we read together called Does Translation Contribute to Facilitating Second Language Acquisition? By Alsawi from the Theory and Practice in Language Studies Journal. So we're here to talk about translation and its use in...
Just like a real quick thing, this publication is from January 2026. So starting with like the hot off the presses studies this year.
We went straight to our SLA guy and said, we want the freshest SLA you can possibly find. And he said, here you go. And that guy was Bill with his institutional access to research articles.
I'll be your dealer anytime.
So Bill, like, how have we gaslit ourselves with the use of translation in our second language acquisition classes?
Yeah, well, I think we've talked about this before, over-reliance on translation. If students have no reason to pay attention to the language, if you're just going to give them a translation afterwards, then that might not be the most judicious use of translation. So I think that's probably where we gaslight ourselves the most, is over-translating something that or using translation to simplify something to a point where you lose the original message, mistranslation, getting lost in translation. I think that could be another gaslight. So being careful to not get lost in some idiomatic expressions, because I know those can be tricky. And making sure that if we are translating those kind of idiomatic expressions to students, I use some idiomatic expressions for passwords. And I learned that from, I think Bryce Hedstrom has a book of how to use them. And he's got one that has a story with it. So no se ganó Zamora en una hora. Zamora wasn't won in an hour, which is but that doesn't make any sense if we just translate that to students. But if we tell them the story of what happened, then they're so it's Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
So also there's a real big benefit to it too, though, I guess, that kind of cultural knowledge. But yeah, I think those are a couple points that overuse, possibly mistranslating, and not really getting the heart of the language translated.
Totally. Sometimes I see with my students, because they have not historically thought about language in an abstract way as an object of study, they just used it. They think that other languages are English, just wearing different clothing. And so that for every English word, there's an exact German word and you just need to learn it. And for every German word, there is an exact English equivalent and you just need to know it.
And text as well.
Of course, no. Yes. We know that this is not true, of course, because this is our lives. And yeah, we have to be careful that when we're translating stuff that we don't pretend that these words only mean these one things that we're saying, and that there are no layers to the language that reveal themselves through use and time and exposure and cultural background, like you said. I would say that one time I got feedback that made me was in a lower level class. I was getting feedback from my students about how things were going in their learning. And a student mentioned something to the effect of, oh, I feel like I can translate everything we're doing in class real well. And to me, I felt like I had missed the mark in some way, in that this student saw that as the worthy goal and what we were supposed to be doing and how they would know they were successful, versus what I thought my goal was, which was learning things about each other and the world through the language.
Yeah.
And so if we over-rely, we can get into that place of the students think that is the point when it is not quite the point.
And I think that brings up something that we were talking about pre-show, potentially the need for capital T translation and lower T translation to distinguish translation as a study. Because what I heard when you mentioned your student's reflection was, I'm a good translator, not I'm a good communicator. It also makes me think of that guy that won French Scrabble but doesn't speak French.
He's just a repository for what to him are just like pictures, essentially,
It,
right?
right, yeah, it's just, you just got all the words.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that might be an urban legend, I don't know, but funny nonetheless. What else? Anything else that you
The other
think?
thing we talked about was we obviously we're trying to maximize the use of the target language in class because there is a positive correlation between the use of the target language in class and students' proficiency gains. So if we are taking the time to translate everything or a lot of things, then that is time that we are not necessarily in the target language, like providing more input directly into students' brains. One point where I have had personal beef, perhaps, is a lot of the pedagogical publications of our national organization talk about how to establish meaning of new vocabulary and structures towards our students. And they provide a lot of strategies that I would totally agree with. Obviously, giving examples, using lots of pictures, like using narrative to make that clear, pointing directly at videos and pictures and posters and infographics and all that sort of stuff. Modeling, all these things are really powerful. TPR, those sorts of things are very powerful to give the language without kind of the medium of the L1 in between. At the same time, our students are going to think of the L1 equivalents, especially early in their studies, because that's just what their brain wants to do. Their brain is saying, what's happening? Am I understanding? And sometimes it really is faster to just tell them, especially if it's something abstract, like an adverb, like already or something. And that one comes up because as I was filming for my Actful Teacher of the Year portfolio, I was filming my lesson and it felt very high stakes and I was very sweaty. As part of it, I was modeling the interpersonal task that I was having students about to do. So I brought a kid up to the front and just did the task essentially with him to have a conversation about our compatibility and whatever issue we were talking about. And so we were going back and forth, and I used the word schon in German, which means already. And he didn't know what it was. And to me, I was like, it's not that big of a deal. But like, he got really stuck on it and like essentially halted the conversation more or less because he was unsure what that meant in this other sentence that he otherwise understood. And I, being with that in my mind, that I'm like, I'm filming this for other people to watch, and they need to see that I am the most slay girl boss ever. I cannot use translation because if I do, they've got snipers on the roof trained on me and it will be over. And so I tried to explain it. I tried to give examples. I tried to whatever. And I came out of it just being like, honestly, the easier, faster way to keep that conversation going with a novice, like he was a high novice, but he was a novice, would have been to just say, oh, Sean means already, or write it on the board. And maybe don't say it in the English. If I wanted to really limit my personal use of English, I could have written it on the board in German and English and just moved on with my life. But I think that like our learners' brains are really already doing that work of what does that mean? What does that mean every day, all the time, when they're first getting their making their first steps in the language and they're not used to hearing the stream of sounds, they're not used to functioning in a fully other language. They are doing a lot of translation on their own, kind of instinctually and as a way to check their own progress.
I've had students like think that is the way to go about like doing communication. They're like, oh, well, I just want to write down all of my thoughts in English first, and then I'll just translate it. I'm like,
And it just doesn't work. It just
no.
like it is like a, it's a
Like
hiccup.
they want to, but that's not like, that's not the best use of your time, friend.
Totally. And I would say that kind of one last thought that it branches off of talking about that is that I was thinking about our standards, our national standards, and one of them is language comparisons. And I think, again, if you're trained to think about language in a sort of abstract way, then you are going to start being like, ah, they have conjugation and ah, they do this. What our students are, we're also told to teach our conjugations and grammar things more like vocabulary. And so they're perceiving them as vocabulary. Oh, this word means swims, but this word means swim. And so I think that in order to fulfill that language comparison standard, translation is a way pedagogically for us as teachers to guide that, like, huh, sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that. Bill is in the pocket of big pop-up grammar. He gets paid by the pop-up grammar industrial complex. But no, you've really turned
Big
me
bucks.
towards using it more judiciously and more systematically, because that is a natural place to make those language comparisons and say, oh, in English, when we try to do that grammatical move or that discourse move, we do this, but in German, we do this. And the kids see an example of it right in front of them. So it's not this weird abstract. It's like, oh, we said this thing that we all understood, and here's how it worked on a mechanical level. And that translation is the medium for that. So I think that is a way to fulfill the comparison standards, is to open those conversations about translation. Not the only way, of course, but one way.
Great. All right. Moving into Gatekeep. Like Ben said, the article that we looked at this week was Does Translation Contribute to Facilitating Second Language Acquisition by Alsawi? And figured the best way to like give an introduction to this article, what to expect from it, would be to look at the questions. What were they actually like looking to do here? So they had two research questions. Number one, to what extent does translation contribute to facilitating second language acquisition? Which this was a that was a survey, right? Yeah, that one was a
Yes, the
survey.
Likert scale survey.
So since that was a Likert scale survey, that was getting teachers' perspectives. And so just so that we know that this wasn't a study that was trying to find out something, create something new. They wanted to find out what people's perspectives were. And then two, so one, to what extent does it contribute to language acquisition? And two, what are students' perspectives on benefits and challenges of utilizing translation as a pedagogical vehicle to support second language learning? So just want to make it clear that like although they do tie some of their findings from these surveys to other studies, one which we've put in our back pocket for a later date, maybe. Like it's important to know that like this study is about like what people think about translation, not we tried these different things and this is what worked best. So with that in mind, they had about for the students, they had 355, they had 355 undergraduate students in English language and translation program, and they did mixed methods. So the first part of to what extent is it does it facilitate language learning was quantitative. Qualitative for the student questionnaire. So their finding, starting with their first question, the extent of translation's contribution to facilitating SLA, they had this huge, wonderful chart. Do you have any highlights from that section, Ben?
Yeah, I love that. First of all, this chart on the right side, it just says like level of correlation. It's just like high, low. And so that is helpful because it kind of just like gave that out. Anyways,
That's actually
some
that
of
was
my things
helpful.
that stuck out, like some of the highest ranked correlation things in terms of that the participants strongly agreed or agreed with the assertion, were that translation plays a crucial role in acquiring new vocabulary. So the students who were in an English language degree program felt that the use of translation in class helped them acquire more vocabulary. Great. Another thing that I really agreed with was enhancing their reading comprehension. Super. Translation helps in understanding linguistic differences between the first and second languages. Hey. Just like I was just saying. Translation should be an essential strategy in acquiring second language was the fourth most like highly correlated with agreement statement. And then number five was translation helps speaking skills. So that is something we think of that as a reading and writing exercise, because translation is the work with written text, where interpretation is the work with spoken or signed text. But they felt that the actions of doing translation as part of coursework also helped them speak the language better. So I found that highly interesting. They also had a separate set of questions about the potential pitfalls. And they're like the number one most agreed with statement was that relying too much on translation can weaken the ability to think in the second language. So that was
Right.
another little interesting
Which
finding to come out of that.
is kind of what we were saying earlier. Like when you rely so much on translation, like if you're just going to translate everything that you say, then yeah, like they don't have a purpose to think in the language. I really liked the student perspectives from this, from the survey, not survey, from the questionnaire. So like students found that translation helped their learning, which we've already mentioned, but some said it speeds up language learning in their opinion. Again, in their opinion, right? These are all perspectives. It can help students understand more quickly, which we've also already said. Like if it's just a single word, it's the easiest way to, or super abstract, it's just the super easiest way to just give a quick translation, which leads into their second point, which was meaning comprehension. They found that, or the students stated that they were able to understand things better because they were trying to translate.
Found that really that perception that again that the top perception about acquiring new vocabulary was like the top most agreed with perception. Interesting. I took a course in literary translation at UCLA while I was there with Michael Heim, who was a translator out of Slavic languages, and it really challenged me a lot because translation, like capital T translation, like you're talking about, requires his assertion that I that really stuck with me is that you have to be a good writer in the L1. So, like, I would translate from any of my languages to English. That would be the work that I would do as a translator. And so, that you had to be a strong writer in the L1, which implied a certain level of like vocabulary knowledge and understanding of how our language works and all that sort of stuff. But I found that in doing the course where I was obviously translating text from German to English, you end up having to think on this level again because you have all this cultural background knowledge. You have all this context and language use that lives in this very abstract way that when you're forced to do big T translation, you go in thinking this word means this, but sometimes you're like, this word is in the neighborhood of this feeling or perception. So I need
Right.
to mine my like English knowledge in order to like make that really work.
For
And so I
sure.
think there's something to that again. Like I probably made some big leaps in my vocabulary by looking at texts that intensely, and I think you really think deeply about them. You are getting more input by reading and rereading and stuff like that. So that stuck out to me. And obviously linguistic differences. Again, you're working between, if you translate something word for word out onto the page, you end up seeing how insane it looks. Germans are putting the verbs at the end of clauses and just sound like Yoda, and the kids always think that's hilarious. But it gives you a perception of like how in German writing, sometimes they make you wait for it. They make you wait for all the action at the end of the sentence. There's certain almost like punchlines that hit differently just because of how the language is structured, and that you have to then, in your translation, try to recreate that in some sort of meaningful way is tough. And again, that's beyond the work of most of the novices and intermediates that we're working with. But in looking closely at text, they can read and reread and try to get, if they're doing smaller translation, obviously not like literary translation or high stakes UN documents or whatever, they can expand their vocabulary by looking at texts very closely.
Yeah. Question about choral translation. Have you ever done choral translation in class?
Have I ever?
So like going from like this like one like no us knowing that our languages aren't one to one, how do you help stu guide students through that? Like if word order is different.
There are two ways essentially that you can do it, which is one, just plow through the words exactly as they are in the L2. So we do German word order. And so I sometimes call that Shakespeare because obviously it sounds all crazy and poetic and wild in a way that it isn't in a normal English sentence. And then sometimes I think once we've done that for a while and they can see that things are nuts, I say, let's do it normal English word order. And so then I start pointing because again, German sends stuff to the end of the sentence. I'll have to be pointing at two things that form this like bracket that mean one verb or whatever. Went is like component at the beginning, component at the end. And so I'm like pointing to both, and then I have to stretch my arm to like go to the next thing where it would sound natural in English. I'm like moving around and stuff like that. And I think that kind of physically visualizes the difference of like how we might translate this if we were telling our friend what that German person just said versus how we would translate it if we were working word by word, pulling up Google Translate or something and in typing in every single word and then ending up with something that sounds like nuts. What about
What
you?
else? Yeah, I mean, I try to go, I point to the words in the order that we would say them in English, but yeah, like same thing. Sometimes I'm like stretched out across the board if I've got like the reading on a projector or something, because multiple words have to go into this to make the meaning, or there's multiple parts that make this mean what it means. And but yeah, like I think I do that more with like Spanish one. I don't do that with Spanish four, but, or if I do, it's like a sentence. Like we're not doing like whole texts or anything, but with like my Spanish one, I think it's a really good way to check comprehension, because, and I tell them like I need to hear, I know how many voices I should hear. So if like a word gets softer or voices start to drop out, that tells me we don't know it well. So like now we can circle that sentence or something, get more mileage out of the word that they get stuck on.
So that covers essentially the Likert scale things, which again for our listeners is like just a scale from strongly agree to strongly disagree, with gradients in between that, a 5-point Likert scale in this one, for instance. What about the interviews, Bill? What stuck out to you about the semi-structured interviews? They took students essentially at 8 different proficiency levels and asked them about their perceptions. What came out of that for you?
So they mentioned vocabulary learning, but they also said like translating helped long-term memory, which I don't know. I mean, that's their perspective, so I can't disagree with what they say, but I'm not sure about the benefit of that. But like I was thinking about like, okay, if we're asking students like to translate, like that is like that's pretty good recall, like, or retrieval practice. That's what it is, retrieval practice. Like, because maybe they haven't thought about this word in a while, but they know it and they just need to like pull it out of their head. So like I guess maybe I could see how that might be beneficial, but again, we're not talking about how we're doing translation here or whatever. Anyway, enhanced reading comprehension. They said it enhanced reading comprehension. They said it helped them understand grammatical differences. Even the students were in agreement that it saves some time, like rather than trying to act out and give the word already a million different tries at like expressing it. Like the students understood, or participants understood, that it could speed things up in that way. And then for beginners, it gave them kind of like a safe place. Like, and also like you said, Ben, like they're already doing it in their heads, regardless, and we can't stop them from translating in their head. So if they're gonna be doing, I guess, like let's do it in the most optimal way.
One student essentially perceived that it would be more helpful in the lowest levels of language learning. And I could see that from a motivational standpoint of just like confirmation that you're getting it, right? I think an immersive environment can be frustrating, it can be anxiety producing. And just the confirmation that you've understood what's happening feels very substantial, feels very huge, I think, for students. But I think that giving that, and we know that we want students to be making form meaning connections. So, what sounds and what letters and characters make up what meaning. And if we are for sure making those strong connections early on, that builds a basis of vocabulary that they can then work from in higher proficiency levels to be more exclusively in the target language. For instance, like I can do my dictionary searching of a German word on a German to German dictionary versus in a German to English dictionary. Because I can understand that. I have enough vocabulary to understand the definitions in in the entry. But someone at a lower level still needs to acquire that basic vocabulary.
Or the
And I think
definition. Yeah.
there probably is a point, like a fuzzy point in the middle, where it goes from being supportive for a beginning learner to being just less, you're getting less juice for the squeeze later for intermediates and maybe advanced learners.
Yeah. They also did address some challenges. They thought that too much translation can hinder thinking and the L2. So thinking everything through your first language lens rather than thinking through a second language. And
I just had it gave us a kind of we're just getting to the end of the semester. It's tomorrow as of recording this. Will be our last day in the first semester because we start so late in Washington State. And my students in my third and second year classes have been describing kind of their increase in German proficiency via our use of free choice reading in the language. We read for 5 to 7 minutes every day in German from my classroom library. And a couple students have described the same thing without us having talked about it really as a class. The transition that they've been making the longer that we read from reading word by word and translating word by word towards reading with fluency and feeling like they're just in German mode. And I think that the learners are aware that there is some efficiency to that in the beginning to establish the strong basis of vocabulary that makes them able to read the text in the first place, but that after a while they just want to get into a flow in the language,
Yeah.
and that's where they. The Krashen's research is a lot about how students get into that flow state with reading, and that's where their vocabulary just like starts skyrocketing because they're making really rich connections in these like semantic webs of vocabulary in their mind of meaning and what words go together and collocations and what words you often see in the same sort of texts. And that extensive reading is really what builds out that vocabulary. But again, they need to have a basis of understanding enough of the words to read something for pleasure or with some sort of ease. And a couple of my students, it sounds like, have made that flip this year, which is like really exciting for me as their teacher. It means that we're vibing way more in the target language. But yeah, there's a diminishing returns there. And they have that citation that Bill alluded to earlier. We're trying to get to maybe talk about on the pod because it sounds like there are some researches about the diminishing effectiveness as language proficiency increases.
And then another challenge, which we've talked about already as well, errors with word by word translations can cause confusion or at least be misleading because they might not have like the cultural element. They might not have the, what was the word that you used earlier? Like
Text in
the vibe of a word, whatever.
the kind of sh the layers of meaning that go
Yeah, yeah,
into
yeah,
a word. Yeah.
So, and I think this kind of actually would work as a pretty good transition to Girl Boss if you're ready. Some pedagogical implications. Do you do any of these?
Totally. Yeah. I think that like for levels, especially levels 1 and 2, which are like my novice and mid to novice high students, who I'm then trying to push over the bridge into intermediate land. I do frequently use just translation to give definitions of words straight up. I mean, obviously, just being like, this means this in the language in L1, L2. And if a new word comes up, I write it on the board, L1, L2, in different marker colors. So it's clear that they're two different languages. Just pro tip. But that's minimal translation. And then in terms of using it more extensively at the sentence or paragraph or text level, we sometimes do choral translations. My student teacher and I were working on a text about a co-constructed story that the students had created and went through the text chorally for one paragraph. And then we did an activity which I learned from Keith Toda, which is, I think in Latin it's stultus, which means liar or lie. I don't know Latin. But essentially that a student is pointing at the word and the teacher is translating. And if they translate poorly, if they mistranslate something, then all the students in the class get to yell liar or whatever at them.
It's
Feels
fine.
funny. Yeah. And so we did that today where we did one paragraph where the class was translating, one paragraph where the teacher was translating, and then it just helped mix it up so that we could get through the text and make sure We had told this whole story and we had established meaning for the words via gestures and translations, but we wanted to make sure that meaning was still coming across in the context of the story. But again, I think for the reasons I described in Gaslight, I've been trying to think more about, especially like if we think of things in the kind of like classic TPRS sequence of establish meaning, you know, PQA, ask a story, whatever it is, and then read. That I'm trying to use translation, especially like in the established meaning, and then throughout the kind of story creation PQA thing, like it to, hey, what did I just say? Whenever I make a statement using a target word, to really establish that the students are making those connections to the sound of the word and the written form and its meaning. But then as that is used repetitively and that we're have used it in context in the story and its meaning is clear through the story or whatever, that eventually you're backing off on the use of translation and just starting to use the word more to learn cultural content, to read another story, that sort of thing. And so that has been something I reflected on in the last couple of years of just like how to do that gear shift away from heavy on translation to the point where a kid thought that was the point of the class towards translation as they put it in the article, supportive pedagogical strategy,
Wonderful.
which is where I'm there. I'm like, yeah, it's supportive of the other things we're doing, which are heavily in the L2.
And I mean, like they say to thoughtfully, the study recommends that translation be thoughtfully integrated into L2 context while maintaining a balanced use of translation in the L2 throughout the learning process, particularly in the early stage. And I think something that you said about like confirming students confirming that you're getting it, like that's got my wheels turning. Like maybe as a quick exit ticket every once in a while, just give them a couple sentences to do as they walk out the door just so they can check.
That was a Ben Slavic thing, is you want to give an easy grade, be like, pick at a paragraph from a text you're reading and go translate that one. And then just take it up from every kid and then you can see how they're doing. Yeah. But I think what we come back to is that like we are trying to maintain target language environment because that actually is like the most efficient way to get students to acquire language is through form meaning connections, meaningful context, real language use, not these abstracted conversations about language. Obviously, kids are curious, and that's going to come up, and you're going to be able to pop up that do pop up grammar in the middle of that to be able to say, oh, when we translated it like this, it was because of this feature of the language. How neat. English sure does that different. But the most efficient way to get students to be able to use the language is through that heavy use of the target language in a comprehensible and comprehended way.
Any final notes?
What we have come around to is use it judiciously, aka not a ton, that at the lower levels it is like it can be a good confirmation of, yeah, I'm getting it, which feels motivating and it feels pushing them towards continued success in the language. And then that you can fade that, and then you might end up using other strategies instead. There are many other ways to establish meaning, as we discussed, that eventually
That
as they
would be
get
a
higher
girl boss of
proficiency.
mine. That would be a girl boss of mine. I think I'm more instinctively giving like synonym stacking. And like giving examples. Like I'm more instinctively doing that now when students ask what something means. So that would be a girl boss of mine. That would be a final girl boss.
Yeah, totally. And that's what, again, we're building these kind of like webs of language. Like this word is connected to this word in meeting. Yeah, using that, using being able to give more examples in the language or use the language, obviously, to describe a word is like the most galaxy brain version. That is ideally what we're headed for. But at the lower levels, I don't think there's shame in using it minimally to establish meaning of especially abstract words, but anything. Just to make sure that students are understanding and coming along for it, and then using the target language heavily and
Yes.
consequentially in class to talk about real things such that students acquire that strong vocabulary that they're able to then apply in their continued intermediate and beyond growth where they can become more independent learners.
All right, well, consider us gaslit gatekept and girl bossed. And until next time, go out there and slay.
Bye.